Okay, our final speaker is Bano Mede. Bano, you have to start coming this way now. Okay, Bano is currently undertaking her PhD research here at McGill in the Department of Geography. Her area of specialization is impacts of climate change on agricultural cropping systems and the consequences on water resources. And to say, I've known Bano for a long time. When I was a shiny new professor just starting out of my career, when Bano was just starting her stint as a student, I hired her as an undergrad for the summer. So we've known each other for a while.
Thank you, Don. Yes, Don gave me my first summer job at Mac. I don't know how many points I get. I graduated from Mac for my bachelor's, and I graduated from my master's from McGill. And now I'm trying to complete my PhD at McGill. And I've also worked at the Bray Center. So how many points are that? I don't know.
You have 30 seconds.
All right. So good afternoon, everybody, and I'm very pleased to be up here today and talk to you about some of the research I'm doing, but also some of the literature reviews on the subject. I'm going to talk to you today about the climate change and the impacts on crop production and the environment. I don't think the environment has really been touched upon, and at least not in this session, so I'd like to raise some issues and maybe flag some ideas of where we could be heading, because food security is important, of course, but we have to do it in a sustainable way, as well as being respectful of nature and making sure that we have enough natural resources to produce our food. So how am I going to do this? Well, I'm going to start by telling you that the climate will become more variable and will change, but I think we've kind of accepted that by now. I'm going to particularly focus on two of the climate parameters, namely temperature and precipitation. Then I'm going to look at how these two parameters are going to affect agricultural crop production. And I'm quite pleased that I'm the last person in the session because you've heard a lot of this already. So this is very good. But then I'm going to talk about what the ramifications are on the environment, in particular on two aspects. The first one is, what does this mean for land use change? And the second is, what are the consequences on water quality? So I'm surprised we haven't seen this graph. I'm glad we haven't, actually. But this is what it's all about. This is climate change and temperature increases. And the IPCC report states that we can expect temperatures to increase globally, surface temperatures, of about 1.8 to 4 degrees by 2100. That's their best estimate, as they say. So what does this mean for crop production? That's the big question. And we've seen a lot of aspects so far. I'm going to sum it up in four aspects that I think are quite important. The first one is a longer growing season length. Of course, if you have higher temperatures, you are going to have a longer growing season because you're going to have more growing degree days. And Sam pointed this out very well in his presentation. The second aspect is an increase in crop damage and yield reductions. And what I mean by this is really two things. The crop damages are going to occur by what we saw in some of the previous presentations today, that some crops are already at their tolerable threshold limit in terms of high temperatures, for example, places in Africa. So any further increase in temperatures will lead to yield reductions. But even in mid-latitudes or high latitudes, we will probably see more crop damage as well, just due to more extreme events or more drought, as a lot of the speakers have mentioned today. So I think crop damage and yield reductions is something that's going to occur differently in every region, but it's something we're going to have to reckon with. And the third one is that all areas in the world where there's agriculture currently are going to have to adjust their production patterns. Whether this means more harvests a year or simply planting more crop, different kinds of crops that are more adapted to their environment, we're going to see adjusting or, if you like, adaptation in terms of how cropping patterns are going to change. And the fourth one is that we are also going to notice that there's going to be interactions among new or unknown interactions between crops, weeds, insects, and diseases. We're not sure how the weeds, for example, are going to spread given new climate zones and what that means for our ecosystems right now and our agricultural production systems. So this is something else that we have to focus on. However, I'm going to focus on the first aspect because I only have a few minutes to keep going. So if I show you this diagram or graphic from the IPCC report, it sums up really nicely the global impacts of climate change on agriculture. And they focus on three aspects. The wheat is the cereal productivity. The livestock productivity are the cows that you see, and then the logs are forestry production. And what you notice is that blue is an increase in productivity and red is a decrease. And really, in different parts of the world, you have different things happening. And this depends on many, many aspects. For example, the current climate in those regions and also the soil types and also the markets that are in those countries or regions and the government support and the access to knowledge, et cetera, et cetera. What I find interesting, though, is that if you look here in the mid-latitudes in developed countries, for example, you see that if you just focus on cereal and livestock production, you see that there will be an increase in productivity. And that's what's particularly interesting to me, because these countries already have very strong agricultural markets in place, and they have the opportunity to benefit from agricultural increases in productivity. But what does that mean for the environment? Oh, yes, the IPCC has also stated that mid to high latitude crops will benefit from a small warming up to about 2 degrees. But after that, we will see a decline in crop productivity. This was highlighted again in some of the previous presentations. So the longer growing season, again, I'm focusing on these mid-latitudes in developed countries, I believe that there will be opportunities for farmers. For example, they may be, decide to plant higher value crops, for example, vineyards or other market opportunities, niche markets, other high-value crops that currently aren't able to be produced in their region. Also, we will see a northward extension of croplands and grazing zones. For example, there's a study by Southworth et al. That looked at the Great Lakes region in the United States, and he found that for winter wheat, corn, and soybeans, the northern states were going to experience significant increases in their yields because of the temperatures, not looking at water availability, but that the southern states around the Great Lakes would actually experience a decrease in yields. So this northward extension of croplands will have implications for how the land will be utilized. And what's interesting then is to look at what these drivers of change are in any specific given region. And the drivers for change can be really proximate drivers or underlying drivers. The underlying drivers are the ones I've highlighted here, and they're more diffuse in nature and happen more on a regional scale. For example, the longer growing season, farmers might see that as a real opportunity, as I've mentioned. The higher growing degree days as well could mean more harvests in a year. Governments might also be providing subsidies for something like biofuel production. How is that going to affect our landscapes, and what does that mean for runoff, for example, if there's more corn planted? Land might be more valuable as well, which may lead to an intensification of agricultural land. So basically, all these drivers for changes are unknown right now, and so we're not sure what it really means for the environment. But I think this is an issue that's very important to know more about, given our agricultural importance in Canada, but also in other parts of the world. So moving on to the second parameter then, the precipitation. Precipitation predictions from the IPCC are a bit more difficult than temperature predictions. Basically, the global climate models are not able to replicate or to project precipitation changes as well as they are temperature changes. However, there are some things we do know about precipitation patterns in the future. And the first one is that precipitation will be less reliable in the future. We cannot count on precipitation patterns of the past to show us what the future is going to be like. And we've heard again that there might be more droughts, for example. And this is something that may occur everywhere in the world. Also, we know that the frequency of extreme events is projected to increase. And, of course, this has implications for crop production and yield reduction. However, the third aspect, the intensity increases, is what's really quite interesting. Because if precipitation intensities increase, as they are projected to do, and it varies regionally, then this will have important ramifications on agricultural cropland, especially those lands that are bare and don't have any residue on them. There was a report that the Soil and Water Conservation Society in the United States published in 2003, and they looked at historic data, sometimes going back to 1930, all for a U.S.-wide coverage. And the data they looked at was on precipitation intensity and how that affected runoff and erosion on agricultural land. And what they found is really fascinating, that in fact, historically already, until now, the 15 and 30-minute rainfall intensities have already increased by 10%. And this is greatest for the 2 and 5 year return periods. So these are storms that happen quite frequently. We're not talking about extreme events here. We're talking about the sort of normal, everyday rainfall. And what this means is that for a 10% increase in mean annual precipitation, they found that the erosion, on average for the United States, changed by 24% and runoff by 25%. So you can imagine what this means for water quality. The water quality implications will be quite large, especially those lands that are bare or that, as I mentioned, do not have any residue cover. We also know that the use of nutrients in agriculture has increased. For example, in Canada since the 1950s, since record keeping, the amount of nitrogen fertilizer has increased 75-fold. Nitrogen is, of course, the most important plant element, followed by phosphorus. So if surface runoff is likely to increase, you can imagine that the transportation of nutrients towards water bodies will also increase. And to tie this back then to land use, is that land use is known to affect the adjacent water quality. So if residue measures and best management measures and buffer strips, for example, are implemented, we will be able to reduce this amount of runoff that's making its way to the waters. So any physical barrier will help, for example. I guess to tie this all together then, I did highlight the land use and the water quality implications, but there are other global changes that will impact crop production, not only that, but also impact our environment. And we really cannot look at these separately. They are all linked, and that you've probably heard this in some of the other presentations. But population change is something that we can't ignore. By the year 2050, we're expected to be 9 billion on this planet, which places tremendous demands on our agricultural commodities. And so agriculture has to be met to feed this growing population. But we have to make sure that it's done in a very sustainable way, as I've mentioned at the beginning. Also, energy changes. Whether we like it or not, renewable crops will play a part in the future of our energy needs, and they will be able to meet some of that demand. But to what extent they will play is uncertain. For example, if biofuel crops such as corn are grown more often, we know that corn does have a wider row spacing, and so the potential for runoff is much greater. And the third factor, then, is the economic changes. We can't ignore that some countries are moving up in this world, for lack of a better term, and there are market factors. There will be more demands on certain crops than others, and agriculture will be looked at to meet those needs. So these are all connected to the bigger picture of the environment and global food security, I believe. So in closing, then there are climate change impacts on crop production. We've seen that temperature increases will lead to a longer growing season, but whether this will benefit some areas or be a bad thing in other areas is uncertain. Also, I didn't talk about frost incidences, but we know that frost incidences will be less predictable as well. There will be also more precipitation variations, and as I've pointed out, we can expect more intense events to impact agricultural crop fields. Elevated CO2 is another impact of climate, but Bert Drake talked about that. But then tied into this, there are resulting non-climatic factors that will impact the environment, such as water. I talked about water quality, but let's not forget water quantity. Is there enough irrigation water to meet the demands for our future crops that we'd like to grow? Then the nutrients, as of course I mentioned, the nitrogen and the phosphorus, we can expect to see more nutrient runoff and leaching into our waterways. Erosion is a problem, and also pests and diseases. So with that in mind, I'd like to leave it there and say thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, at this